All right, back here on OMF, it's time for our get-together with Mike Lombardi, part of the Brady Watch segment, brought to you by Northeast Electrical. We are powered by difference. Visit needco.com and join us live on the Harbor One Hotline. Is indeed Mr. Mike Lombardi. Hello, Mr. Lombardi.
Oh, where is he today? Where is he today? Let's see. He's probably somewhere. Let's figure out where he is. We've got to get this down, right?
I got to figure it out.
Playing for the Costa Rica, whatever the hell they're called.
I like your column today, though. You break it all down. So we got the elite quarterbacks. We have the workable quarterbacks. We have the wasting time bust quarterbacks. So is Brady, in your mind, in that elite group right now?
Well, I don't think you could call him elite. I mean, that elite group that just carries the team, and I think it's hard to say somebody at that age can be elite. I don't think Drew Brees is elite, but they certainly can win, and there's things they do extremely well. But elite is a guy that just basically, i.e., Patrick Mahomes, makes everyone else better, and I think that ultimately, that category is a little bit harder to get into than most people would suspect.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. It's like, where is he going? What's going to happen? I'm going to take a different approach. I'm going to look at other quarterbacks out there that could possibly fit into the New England Patriots system, because Matthew Stafford, I saw, was rumored to be a possible candidate based on, it's not my call. I didn't bring it up, but I thought about it. I was like, let's just say something did happen and Brady's not here. Do they go the Andy Dalton route or do they go the Matthew Stafford route?
Well, I mean, look, the Matthew Stafford route's expensive, right? I mean, it's going to cost you how much cap room, and I think all that has to come in. I think there's and then Andy Dalton's not exactly cheap. He's cheap for what starting quarterbacks are going for, but not necessarily depends on what role you're bringing him into. And that's what I wrote the column about. The column's about what's the bridge, right? Where is the bridge going from A to B? You know, I think when you drafted Jimmy Garoppolo, you felt like a Tom at his age, at 36, could he keep playing? No. So he was going to be an elite player that was allowing you to bridge to the next player. Then all of a sudden he kept playing great, and that bridge got blown up because it just time ran out on you. So I think before you can answer the question, I think you got to figure out what you're going to have around that player. How's that player going to fit within the team? And are you going to pay that much for a bridge? Or are you just going to say, okay, going to build this team, just like the Chiefs did with Alex Smith. We're going to develop the offense around him, but we're always looking for someone else.
Mike, you see some of the other moves defensively, right, for this football team, and I wonder how much it's tied into Brady. Like Devin McCourty, for example, Van Noy, if you think he's gone, or Tooney, or Jamie Collins, are they tied in somehow? Is it if you're not bringing back Brady, do you really bring back McCourty? Is it a rebuild? Like, how are they tied in your opinion?
Oh, I think they're all – I mean, look, I think you got everything's evaluated on – will he help us today, tomorrow? I think you got to look at it in terms of what they always believe that, strategy and tactics are two different things. Strategy is for the future. Tactics are for today. I think you got to look at that the same way when you're breaking this down. Like, look, in 2 years, can this player play at a level? And what does this contract mean when he's playing? Is he valued? Are we getting a deal? Is it the market rate? Or we have to overpay? I don't think you ever look at it like, okay, since we're not bringing back Tom, we can't bring back McCourty. I don't think that's the case. I think everyone's an individual basis, and it depends on where you think this deal's going to go and where the market is, because ultimately it comes down to your evaluation of the team.
So staying with the replacement act, and we know that Bill does not show his cards. The one question we all have internally here is Stidham a guy he thinks – is developed enough where he can actually play next year? Then I look at the schedule coming up next year, and they're playing two games out in L.A., and they're playing games in Kansas City. And then the schedule, road trips themselves, West Coast road trips, playing the 49ers at home, at Seattle, at Houston, Baltimore Ravens at home. With that schedule, do you think Bill would hand over the reins to a kid who's never done it before?
Well, I think, it depends on how good the kid is, right? I mean, if you draft somebody the sixth pick of the draft, you're going to hand over the reins to them or whatever, whenever you pick that high. I think a lot of it is dependent on how well the player plays. And as you know better than anybody, having watched this operation for the last 20 years, no one's given a job. It's earned.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be earned. And so I don't think you could answer that question until it's actually earned. If it's earned, certainly he'll get that job.
Just going back to the Super Bowl, since we haven't talked to you since then, is there a certain sequence or possession that stood out to you where you said, okay, that was a bad decision. Like, for instance, the San Francisco 49ers deciding not to call timeout. Even John Lynch was up in the booth saying, call timeout, call timeout. They get a big run, and then they decide, okay, now we're going to try and get the ball down the field. They get it to Kittle, but he gets an offensive pass interference.
You know, I don't know why John would want that. I thought the game, the way Kyle managed the game at the end of the half was the exact way to do it. I think the ball's at midfield. It's third down. You know, if Mahomes gets a first down there and you've called a timeout to stop the clock, all of a sudden you're giving him more time. Do you really think you're going to get the ball in good field position to move it? Probably not. They got it at the, you know, they punt the ball barely out of bounds. They get it. So my whole thing and what I talked about last Friday before the game was, let's get this game into the fourth quarter. Let's have a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter. Let's make sure nothing happens. They did that. It's 10-10 at halftime. And up until the 8-minute mark of the fourth quarter, they played that game perfectly. They were really good at that game. The one drive I think they really made a mistake on, no one talks about it, was when they're up 20-10 and they intercept the pass. That drive stalled. They needed to score points there because everybody in the building knew 20 wasn't going to be enough. You needed to score points there. And then I think the two plays, the obvious one is 3rd and 15. That's the obvious one. The non-obvious one was the pass interference call in the end zone. What happened on that play, and these are how these two things link together. The 45-yard pass on 3rd and 15, they're playing zone. They got a zone beater. So what's the next third down call once you got Burton zone? You play man-to-man. They can't play man-to-man. They're not a man-to-man team. And all of a sudden, Kelsey's one-on-one with a safety, and the safety has pass interference. To me, those two plays were the play of the game in terms of it. The timeout, to me, whether Lynch called it or not, A, frankly, what's he doing on the sideline? Like, that's not what his job is. His job is to stay in the background. If you want to be on TV, stay in TV, ooh, right? Ooh. Like, his job's in the background.
Yeah.
We're talking to Mike Lombardi. Now, Mike, as far as that game goes, you're talking about that was the mistake. They didn't score. So was it just execution? Like, because I know after, when the game is over, it is, oh, Kyle Shanahan blew it again in the fourth quarter. And by the way, Jimmy's good, but he ain't that good. He ain't good enough to win the big game. How do you feel about those two individuals?
I think anybody who wants to blame Jimmy for the loss is really has a lazy narrative. First of all, Jimmy had a larger yards per attempt average in the season than what Matt Mahomes did. Jimmy made a lot of plays for that team. Did he make plays in the fourth quarter? No. The second and five, the ball that gets tipped down, those things happen. Can't let it happen, but those do. I think the fact that if I were to tell you before the game that the Chiefs were going to run it 29 times and the 49ers were only going to run it 22 times, you'd say, well, they're getting blown out in the game, right? And that's not the way that offense was built. They got away from the run game. A lot of the runs with Samuel in there on reverses and all that, they had an opportunity. I don't think that Jimmy played poorly. I mean, he was hot there for a while, bad interceptions, which we talked about him doing that. But typically he bounced back from them. So for me, I think it was a game where if you really want to boil it down, is you're sitting there with a defense that's supposed to be the best defense in the NFL. It's supposed to be one of the best third down defense. It's supposed to be one of the great sack defenses dominated by the front four. They got tired. They couldn't dominate the game on third down, and that's why they lost. Their strength ended up not being as strong as it needed to be at critical times in the game. The other factor to me, and you know, people are talking about, look, the Chiefs played two games. They threw the ball excessively in both games, never got called for holding in either game. And there's no way, and I said this last week, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you walk up to Bill Vinovich and you say, hey, Bill, if you're going to let him get away with holding today and you're not going to call any holding penalties today, you might as well just give him the trophy right now. And that's ultimately really what happened.
All right, so Kyle Shanahan has already come out and said that Jimmy G is his quarterback next year. Who knows what happens beyond that, but next year, and we tie it into everything that's happening with Brady. You tell me, people say we're going to have to wait until March the 18th. How important is the March 10th date when you have to put a franchise tag on these players? For an example, Prescott's probably going to get that tag on March the 10th. So therefore, they're pretty much out of the race because they're going to have to tag him for $33.4 million. Tannehill may get tagged in Tennessee. So aren't a lot of the options for Brady maybe going away by March the 10th?
Yeah, I think you already know that. Look, I don't know where did the Dallas Cowboy rumor come from? Is this a Skip Bayless production?
Yeah, I was going to say Skip Bayless.
I think it is.
I mean, where you're asking me that question. I mean, how bad of that is giving that thought? I mean, that's like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Hold on, Mike, you got to understand. People are going out of their mind up here in New England.
That's out of their mind.
That's
the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
See,
first and foremost.
So you tell me. I think.
Let him go.
Go ahead.
The Cowboys aren't going down Tom Brady's avenue. Jerry Jones, as Bill Parcells aptly said once, he could talk a cash off. He could talk a cat off the top of a fish truck. He's going to talk Dak into a contract. He's going to get a contract. They don't want a 42-year-old quarterback to go with their team right now. That's the most ridiculous thing, rumor. I mean, for all the amount of he's in Nashville, he's in South Dakota, he's in Los Angeles. For the amount of ridiculous rumors, like that one might be top.
Yeah, and there's going to be more of them. But real quick, I want to change gears. So the XFL starts tomorrow. So we've had the XFL version 1. We've had the AAF, which didn't even finish. They didn't even finish the season. So do you think this new version of the XFL, the way they're doing it, their approach to it, do you think it'll work?
You know, I don't. I really don't. I don't think there's an appetite for bad football. I think there's an appetite for, you know, I think it's going to take some time. It's going to take a development. I just don't see it. I think it, you know, I don't want to dismiss it. I need to watch it first before really giving the answer. My instinct says it won't work, but I do think the groundwork and the foundation that they have laid in terms of they don't have an owner. What happens in these leagues is you need time to build, like developing a TV show or a radio show. You need time to build an audience. You need time to build an audience for these eight teams. And if you don't, and if 1 year and done, and you don't have that time, and you don't have the commitment in terms of the financial commitment to stay along, then you got no real chance.
So they don't have an owner? Each team doesn't have an individual owner? Is this collectively owned by just
It's only owned by one man. It's Vince McMahon owns the whole league. So you don't have to worry about payroll. Payroll's already been cut. And so it's not really about, you know, well, I'm getting bored here, I'm losing money, I gotta stop hemorrhaging money. You know, that helps you a little bit in terms of building. You need to build an audience.
I'm also curious, Mike, your opinion on this whole 17-game season. It looks like 18, there was no chance, but now they're talking about 17. You think something like that would happen?
I think we need to understand, like anything, when you get asked a question about the players, what does it look like? Right now, they're playing 20, but they really don't play 20 because they probably, by the time the preseason snaps are done, they really probably play 17 live games. And then in the regular season, if they're fortunate enough, they're in the playoffs. They don't really play 17. They might play 15, right? So how many real games are we going to play? If we're playing 17, do we eliminate 3 preseason games? Is that what we're going to do? Are we getting to 20? How are we? Are we coming back from 20? Because 17's fine if we're not going to have 20. If we're having 20, and you know you got to play in 20, you got to play 17 real and 3 fake. That's a little bit of a problem. If you're playing 17 real and 1 fake, maybe we get that done. Or if you're playing 17 real and you don't, and you have 1 real game and then you have scrimmages or do whatever you want against other teams, that's a different story. So to me, in a vacuum, 17 doesn't – I need to know what the other parts are with 17.
All right, I'm going to leave you with this one. How about Shaq and Barkley ripping apart your 76ers on TV, comparing them, Barkley did, to the Cleveland Browns, Mike?
You're lucky he didn't have – I mean, let him preach. I mean, if anybody who watches the 76ers and watch them closely as I do, you know, what Barkley said is true. They have no mental toughness. You know, the greatest player in the history of basketball, according to most people, is Joel Embiid, and yet he's not even in shape to get up and down the court. You know, every player I've ever been around is great. Who's great makes everybody else great. Every player I've been around who's great is always in the best shape, always works the hardest. I don't think you could say that. I think what Barkley and Shaq said is probably should have been said a year ago, year and a half ago. If you're going to cry after you lose to Toronto with your girlfriend in the locker room, then get your butt in shape the next year.
With your girlfriend.
No, wow. You're totally right. I mean, Embiid should be one
who's
of the
who's going to argue with what I said?
No,
I
mean, nobody.
Watch him play pick and roll. Watch him lose to Atlanta when he's supposed to play pick and roll. I mean, like, you don't want to get me on this avenue because, like, to me, he's exactly what most people fall trap for is they fall, oh, he's got great talent. He's got great talent. Oh, he's the best player in the league. Well, he can't beat Atlanta.
All right, Mike, it's been a terrific season. We appreciate it, and we'll check in every once in a while with you.
Anytime you want to talk Sixers, call me.
I was going to say, especially if the Celtics, the 3 and the 6 seed, face in the first round of the playoffs, that might be interesting. One team Philly can beat, right?
Who knows? Philly can't beat. They can't beat Atlanta. Don't talk to me about beating anybody.
I love it.
All right, Mike. All right, thanks, Mike.
Hardcore 76er fan. Mike Lombardi, right here on OMF.
Follow the Patriots offseason right here. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Hi, Pete Abraham is the latest to come out and say the Red Sox are planning to name bench coach Ron Renicki as the manager, but they're waiting for MLB to conclude the investigation into the 2018 team before they actually make an announcement. The Sox say our managerial search is not yet completed. We will comment at the completion of the search. And according to a source of Rob Bradford's, former Blue Jays manager John Gibbons interviewed for the Red Sox manager job earlier this week. Could it be they're thinking about him as the bench coach? I guess Maloney's out. Update on the Red Sox and the Dodgers trade. John Heyman says the Red Sox are still seeking a top 10 prospect from the Twins in addition to Grotterall. The Celtics host Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks tonight. The tip-off at 7:30 over at the TD Garden. Bruins will host the Arizona Coyotes tomorrow night. Right, back here on OMF, talking about football, did you guys happen to see the Super Bowl replayed this week with all the mic'd up guys, which is always terrific because you really get to see it behind the curtain. That's terrific.
Usually your team's been in it lately, so exactly. Makes it that much more enjoyable.
Right. So my take on all of this is I was a big fan of Patrick Mahomes before the Super Bowl, and obviously he had a terrific game, terrific fourth quarter.
Well, terrific, and he's 7 minutes.
And he's a great quarterback. But after watching this and hearing all of the stuff behind the scene, for example, that 3rd and 15, that was his play. He's the one that called it, that wasp play. He called that play, and he was sitting there going, do we have time?
He requested that. Well, Nick Foles called, Philly special. So.
But listening to all of that, Tyreek Hill at one point is kind of then freaking out. They're down 20-10. He's freaking out, and he's over. They go, baby, you're going to make a big play. To me, he sounds like a leader. He sounds like a guy that's kind of everybody's following. They're listening to what he's saying. And he really knows what the hell he's talking about. I mean, it sounds to me a lot like Brady when you hear Brady wired up, right?
Yeah, especially in big games, and you know when the circumstances are probably at their toughest. You know, he focuses in and he makes sure everybody's thinking the same. I mean that's what great quarterbacks do. You know, all of them: Joe Montana, Troy Aikman, Brett Favre.
This kid's been in the league for 2 years, and he sounds like he's been in for 10 years.
Especially when you point out the fact that really for like I said, 3.5 quarters. It was the worst game he's ever played in his career.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them. It was for 3.5 quarters, and to still be that guy. Yeah, it's special. That's what he is. He's the best player in the league.
So listen to some of this. This is Patrick Mahomes, all mic'd up.
I believe that this is our moment. Believe that this is our moment. Ain't no better time to be great than today.
I got off Sam too quick. He ended up winning. He was getting pressed, but he ended up winning. And I was like, and I tried to hit it to my back in the flat. He was a throw, too. It's got to stay with it.
Good job.
Let's go. We're going to go. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's do it. Give me my helmet.
I'm a beast out here. Oh, I'm a beast. Yeah. Hit me. Hit me. I told you got to hit me. You got to hit me. I got to hit me.
Where's the Kermit the Frog voice?
I got to hit me. Great drive. Great drive.
Both of y'all get open. You be working. Hey, if you're running downfield, keep running. On this play.
Y'all be ready. We ain't done. We ain't done. We ain't done.
That's awesome. That's awesome, coach.
Let's put it down.
Yes, sir.
All the time.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Amazing, coach. That's awesome, man. Amazing. We got it. We got it, baby. We got it, baby. We got it.
The we ain't done was really good because it was at a time when they were kind of losing it. They were losing it.
I don't know what stood out to you, but the fact that he doesn't sound like Kermit the Frog.
I'm telling you, you gotta hit me.
No,
you gotta.
No,
hit
what happened to his voice? Because everybody's screaming on a field because it's so loud. So they're all screaming. So it kind of fits in with everybody's voice.
His voice changes like yours did when you call a game.
Yeah, exactly.
His interview voice is different.
Yours will change.
His interview voice is
hello.
Yeah.
That's awesome, coach.
Let's put it down.
Yes, sir.
All the time.
Yes, sir.
See that? Yes.
That's awesome, coach.
Let's put it down.
Yes, sir.
All the time.
Yes, sir.
See, and people wonder why Eric Bieniemy isn't getting the attention they think he deserves.
He did not come out of this thing well being mic'd up because it looked like the quarterback was dictating what we were going to run.
No, but it's less about that. It's did you hear Eric Bieniemy's name mentioned once?
No.
With all the offensive drives, whether if they were playing bad, it was Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes. If they were playing good, it was Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes. They did not mention his name. The first time somebody mentioned his name is when they found out that he went back to 1948 and copied a Michigan football play on the one.
Yeah.
And that was the whole twirly bird thing that they were doing in the backfield. And they didn't even score on it. They got a first down. That's the first time somebody mentioned his name. He's the beneficiary of an unbelievable quarterback, and so is Andy Reid. And any coach, any head coach, or any offensive coordinator, as green as they can be, can come in there, and Patrick Mahomes, to your point, would say, I got it. No, I want to run this. He's doing this. No, I got this guy. No, 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 no. I want to do this. Same thing Brady does. What do you think what made Josh McDaniels, how many different coordinators came through? And Brady can make all the throws. He identifies the weaknesses. He knows where to go with the football. He knows, he understands the circumstances and the situations in real time. You don't have to sit there and take him off on the sideline and take the little pen and say, you did this wrong. Patrick Mahomes was telling him
what he was doing. The day after the game that Eric Bieniemy wasn't even mentioned in it. Meanwhile, the defensive coordinator for San Fran,
Robert Saleh.
Saleh, yeah. His camera was on him all game long.
Yeah.
Talking about his defense.
Right.
And when they talked about
especially
the offense,
when it broke down,
it was Andy Reid.
Yeah,
and you know, I just said the Super Bowl is like a 2-week opportunity to market this guy as like the an offensive genius, you know. And people could question why he wasn't. I have no idea, but he was not. You know, there wasn't talk about him. It just wasn't. If they hyped him up for 2 weeks, you know, people would then go into the season continuing this hype about this guy. And when the job opened up, he's going to be a candidate. But was he? I think, and we love him, Ben Watson. What did he tweet?
Yeah.
Some team needs to show the courage to hire Bieniemy as a head coach. And it's like, courage? Is that why he's not an NFL coach? Just because the team lacks courage? Like, did we say Miami Dolphins showed a lot of courage? I mean, is that how we want
to
approach it?
Yeah,
they showed a lot of courage hiring a black man. No, they hired a guy they felt like could do the job.
Yeah,
and it felt like they hired a leader of men.
Yeah, I saw that tweet, and I almost responded, but I was like, it's not worth it.
Not
worth it. To me, he just doesn't know what he's talking about. When it comes to this, he should know better. Eric Bieniemy does not have a job in the NFL because he's black. This has nothing to do with it. I played with EB. We have the same circle of friends. I know exactly what's going on. It's the same thing if you look at a defensive coordinator that is brand new in a Bill Belichick offense. I mean, or an offensive coordinator who is in a Bill Belichick, Tom Brady with the quarterback. It takes a couple cycles of success.
He's not getting enough credit for what he does
credit.
There because Andy Reid gets all the credit and Pat Mahomes.
And so does Bill. Bill gets all the credit for every defense that regardless of who's running it.
But his defensive coordinators get jobs.
Yet his coordinators are getting jobs. And that's what they're saying. So they're looking
at
Matt Patricia getting jobs. They're looking
right
at Brian Flores getting jobs.
And eventually.
They're sitting there saying, Eric Bieniemy is not getting a job.
How long was Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel coordinators? Forever.
Yes.
Josh McDaniels.
Right.
Forever.
Right.
Flores was the only one that did it right away, but he had been on the staff so long.
Yeah, but that was pretty quick.
Matt Patricia was there forever.
Right.
Never got any attention. Bill O'Brien, same thing.
See, to me, Christian, a lot of it has to do with the owners. And the owner down in Miami loved Brian Flores. So he didn't look at the fact that Brian Flores was fresh and new. Matter of fact, he looked at it the opposite way. Said, I'm getting a young guy, okay? And he's a minority, and this is even going to be better for us. He's going to be able to fit into what we're doing right now. But when you watch something like this where the players are all mic'd up and Eric Bieniemy is in the background, he's not part of it, I think that hurts him. I do think it
absolutely.
Hurts him.
The Dolphins, the Dolphins ownership, they have courage, though. They have strength. They have internal
strength. I don't know if courage is the right word.
They thought could do the job.
Yeah.
It has nothing to
do with it. I'm so tired of people using that as an excuse.
So you guys have seen this Gail King interview with Lisa Leslie. It was on CBS, and they did it on CBS Morning, and it's to the point now where you're going to hear it coming up next, where Oprah, who is best friends with Gail King, is claiming now, Gail did not show up to work today, that she literally has to hide out. You want to know why? Because she's getting death threats.
On Twitter?
She's getting death threats. That's what she said. I don't know if she's getting them on Twitter. She's getting death threats. We'll let you hear it coming up next.
Glenn Ordway, Lou Merlone, and Christian Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
She's not doing well. May I say she is not? She is not doing well because she has now death threats and has to now travel with security. And she's feeling very much attacked. You know, Bill Cosby is texting from, is tweeting from jail. She's not doing well and feels that she was put in a really terrible position because that interview had already ran.
Mm-hmm. It was over.
And in the context of the interview, everyone seemed fine, including Lisa Leslie.
So that's Oprah Winfrey. She goes on this morning on TV. Wow. On NBC. Basically,
got a phone in jail.
Yeah, to protect her friend, Gayle King, who took the day off today because she can't deal with it right now. She's taking heat, and the heat is hot and heavy. So here's what happened. She sat down with Lisa Leslie, who was a WNBA player, close friend of Kobe Bryant. They did a 5.5-minute interview. It was longer than that, but they were cutting it down to 5.5 minutes. And what CBS did to promote it is use 94-second clip. Now, that 94-second clip specifically discussed Kobe Bryant's rape allegations. So here's the 94 seconds that CBS decided they were going to use to tease and promote a longer interview with Lisa Leslie.
It's been said that his legacy is complicated because of a sexual assault charge, which was dismissed in 2003, 2004. Is it complicated for you as a woman, as a WNBA player?
It's not complicated for me at all. Even if there's a few times that we've been at a club at the same time, Kobe's not the kind of guy, never been like, you know, Lisa, go get that girl or tell her or send her this. Mm-hmm. I have other NBA friends that are like that. Mm-hmm. Kobe's, he was never like that. I just never see, have ever seen him being the kind of person that would be, do something to violate a woman or be aggressive in that way. That's just not the person that I know.
But Lisa, you wouldn't see it though. As his friend, you wouldn't see it.
And that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying things didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe that things didn't happen with force.
Is it even a fair question to talk about it, considering he's no longer with us and that it was resolved? Or is it really part of his history?
I think that the media should be more respectful. At this time, it's like if you had questions about it, you've had many years to ask him that. I don't think it's something that we should keep hanging over his legacy. I mean, it went to trial.
Yeah, but the case was dismissed because the victim in the case refused to testify. So it was dismissed.
And I think that's how we should leave it.
94 seconds. She's a journalist. That was all she talked about with the rape allegations. Everything else was about what Kobe did, what Kobe mm-hmm. did for the WNBA, for women's basketball, all of the humanitarian things he did outside. Lisa Leslie had no issue whatsoever with anything they did in this interview. So now the world just blows up on Gayle King.
I think right. Gayle King did an excellent job. I think she phrased each question perfectly, even the part where she says you wouldn't see it. That's neither here nor there, but then, you know, that's the reality of it. Or is it even a fair question? Because that's what I want to know. Is it even fair to bring it up?
That was a good question.
Or is it just part of it? Was an excellent question. Yep. And, you know, I don't see why, because that's going to be debated. It was debated the very first day when the lady from the Washington Post came up and brought it up and she got suspended. That's what people are thinking about. So now, do you want to sit there and say, listen, you should wait at least a month before you start making matters harder for the family that lost their father or their husband? Sure. Is that fair to do?
I thought she did a great job with it.
I thought she did an excellent job.
You know, the hours
and I thought
after,
Lisa Leslie yeah, did an excellent job.
The hours after the next day, okay, you know, there's a lot of emotion. People are sad, you know, but here we are, what, a few weeks out?
Yeah, we're separated a couple weeks out.
Yeah, a few weeks out. So, Michael Jackson passed away. How long before it was okay to discuss some of the things that he had done in his past? You know what I mean? Like an icon. People, you know, they love Michael Jackson, but obviously there were some things. Is it fair to bring that up ever?
Yeah, I can't believe the reaction she's getting, because when I first heard it, I thought maybe she only asked questions about the rape allegations. Then I find out it was 94 seconds. Now, she is really mortified and really upset at CBS, because CBS painted her in a light that if you only see the promo, which we just paid played
Why
for
do
you,
think
the
CBS
tease,
played that
then,
promo
because they want to tease the public to view the entire interview. And so she had never done this before, but she went on Facebook Live. She had to, because she was getting destroyed out there on social media.
I've been up reading the comments about the interview I did with Lisa Leslie about Kobe Bryant. I know that if I had only seen the clip that you saw, I'd be extremely angry with me too. I am mortified, I'm embarrassed, and I am very angry. Unbeknownst to me, my network put up a clip from a very wide-ranging interview, totally taken out of context, and when you see it that way, it's very jarring. It's jarring to me. I didn't even know anything about it. I started getting calls. What the hell are you doing? Why did you say this? What is happening? I did not know what people are talking about. I reached out to Lisa because I know that she's a longtime friend of Kobe's to talk about his legacy and their friendship. We had a really wide-ranging interview. Talked about many things. His career, his passion, his sense of humor, the way he was mentoring other people, how he was starting his next chapter. It was wide-ranging. And yes, we talked about that court case, because that court case has also come up. And I wanted to get Lisa's take on it as a friend who knew him well. So for the network to take the most salacious part when taken out of context and put it up online for people who didn't see the whole interview is very upsetting to me, and that's something I'm going to have to deal with them.
Okay, I thought she handled it well. She sat there and said...
But right? I would say that she should be upset, maybe, because they used her, right? They made her look by just promoting this thing.
How did they use her?
Well, I'm just saying they used that part of it to get the attention of it. But how was it taken out of context?
That's my point.
Because people don't have the time or patience, unfortunately, to watch the whole thing.
But, okay, so it was what was out of context? What was taken out of context?
Nothing was taken out of context.
Well, she says multiple times.
No, the interview. Hold on. The interview was taken out of context.
That she didn't like that. Why
the
was it?
Interview. Because what they did is they picked and choose something out of it.
But it
that
wasn't
they wanted
taken.
To,
but the questions were not like gotcha moments. She wasn't trying to trip Lisa
but
Leslie
it wasn't
up.
Edited.
No.
It was the part where they talked about the allegations. What's out of context? That people think that that's all they talked about?
Yeah. It's taken out of context.
You get a 94-second interview on two things on a national televised show.
It's taken out of context when you're not leaving it the way it was presented, the way it was read, the way the interview presented itself. CBS came out and apologized, said Gayle conducted a thoughtful, wide-ranging interview with Lisa Leslie about the legacy of Kobe Bryant. An excerpt was posted that did not reflect the nature and the tone of the full interview. We are addressing the internal process that led to this, and changes have already been made. So you heard
somebody got fired.
So you heard, right?
That's unbelievable.
Somebody's going to get fired.
Everybody, that's unbelievable.
Everybody and anybody
right.
that is in charge of PR and social media would have taken that part of the interview and posted it promote their interview.
Right.
Because they know.
Right. And that's what you do. We all do that. You take little snippets out of it, and you put it out there. So, oh, my God, I got to watch the whole thing. The problem is, even after she apologized and explained that CBS, without her knowledge, took 94 seconds of it and used it as a tease and a promotion, even though she apologized on Facebook Live, she's getting destroyed out there, and especially coming from the black community. Here's Snoop Dogg.
Oh, geez.
Gayle King. Out of pocket for that shit. Way out of pocket. What do you gain from that? I swear to God, we the worst. We the fucking worst. We expect more from you, Gayle. Don't you hang out with Oprah? Why are y'all attacking us? We your people. You ain't coming after fucking Harvey Weinstein asking them dumbass questions. I get sick of y'all. I want to call you one. Is it okay if I call him one? Funky dog head. How dare you try to tarnish my motherfucking homeboy's reputation, punk motherfucker? Respect the family and back off before we come get you.
Hold on, guys. And they're,
what?
He's not alone. He's not alone. Listen to the we And the us, so he's making it a race thing. He's basically saying, what are you doing here, right?
I mean,
we
I get
doing
people
it to
are,
us.
Okay, Snoop's from L.A. I get it. He's an L.A. Lakers fan, but he's an every sport fan. But fans are very territorial now. They're very protective of Kobe and, you know, how they think he should be remembered and what type of line you can cross when you start talking about him or critiquing his life. And I get why they're pissed off, but this is nothing. This is nothing. I don't understand why. Listen, here's the thing. It doesn't tarnish his legacy. It's part of it, but what everything else that he's done, in my opinion, has overshadowed what he did in the past.
Does it tarnish Gayle King's legacy here? I tell you what, there's a long list of people that are out there attacking him.
Christian, to your point, the man has Kobe. You know, since the incident, you see him now, you hear everything. You know, life after basketball, he's, you know, business-wise, very successful. Family man now, got all his kids, seems like a great father. He's turned, you know, things around, right? From basically maybe what happened. If anyone's to blame, it's Kobe.
But they don't want you to mention it.
For what happened back in Colorado. That's like, you know, so, I mean, if they should just ignore it?
Yeah.
So if it's okay, they expect a white guy to bring it up. But if you're black, you shouldn't talk about it.
I would say Harvey Weinstein.
It's a knock against him.
And every other
story. It doesn't tarnish the whole legacy.
I thought she did. Both women did an excellent job. Lisa Leslie handling the question with grace and poise. And Gayle King, you know, listen, challenging her for just, you know, don't be naive. And, you know, and Lisa Leslie was perfect answering the question. She's a big girl. They can all handle themselves. Like, you can deal with difficult topics. They just don't want anyone to mention anything negative about Kobe, period.
They don't. They want you to erase that part of it. And I think the fact that Gayle is black probably adds into it. Right. Why did you turn on us? You're one of us. This is Matt Barnes. Listen to him.
This Gayle King, Lisa Leslie interview, everybody's talking about. First of all, shout out Lisa for handling that the way you did. And then Gayle, I don't even know what to say, to be honest with you. That's just some clown ass shit. And then you come out this morning trying to explain that it was the network. The network cut and edited. Are you surprised that a bunch of white people got the token black woman to go talk bad about some other black people? That surprised you, as old as you are? You're surprised about that? I got to talk to the network. It's going to be out of here. You were the clown they thought you were, and you did what they thought you was going to do.
Again.
It's one right. Guys, I can give you a list. You ready for this one? Who's Little Boozy? You know who he
Little Boozy?
I have no idea who Little Boozy is.
Mason doesn't live to listen to Little Boozy?
Probably does.
Okay, this is Little Boozy.
Gayle King, why the f*** would you ask some like that?
I'm just overhearing.
I don't give a f*** who friend it is. I don't give a f*** you can Obama. Uh-oh. Why the f*** would you do something like that? Why would you do that to your people? You know what people are going through, right? Why would you ask a question like that, trying to tarnish somebody's image? You do that to your own black people. I'm finna know.
Oh,
hello,
Lord, dump machine. See,
it's that one.
The problem with all this, it
leaped out
it
most
should,
of them.
Why does it have anything to do with color? If it was a white person, it clearly should have been brought up because it is part of their resume. It's part of their history. I go back to what Lou just said. I think a lot of people that have brought it up have talked about how he admitted he did something wrong at the time. He took responsibility.
He changed his life.
And he changed his life. So why isn't that included? Do we want a true picture of somebody's life, or do we just want to make it up and play make-believe?
No, you want to make it up. You want to edit it.
And so
you want to take out the negative things, and you only want to be left with the great things, positive things.
I agree. Lisa Leslie handled it perfect, you know, and you can focus on Kobe from that moment, what he did with his life, and credit him, right? And what he made of his life, and how he turned everything around, whatever. I don't even know how much he had to turn around. Obviously, there's some allegations there. But became a great husband, a great father, a great businessman, a great basketball player. You can have those discussions and admit that he wasn't perfect. You know, it's like, if you call, God forbid, you know, Kobe's perfect. You shouldn't bring up anything bad in his life.
I'm going to tell you this right now. Oprah's going to have to bail out her best friend, and she's probably going to have to put her on one of her own shows, and she's going to have to sit there and apologize because that's what everybody wants right now. They want an apology.
What is she going to apologize?
I don't think she owes an apology for anything.
I know you don't.
But you know how it works.
But you tell me, what is she apologizing for?
She brought up an instance in his life that should not have been brought up. But this, we know she will. We know she will.
Is it fair to even ask the question?
Yes.
No, that was one of Gail King's questions.
Yeah.
Is it fair? Because it's been brought up in the past to even ask the question. I'm asking you, Leslie.
No, I actually like. I like the way she worded it.
I thought she did an excellent job.
I like the way she worded it.
And I thought Lisa did an excellent job also.
And again, notice they're going at Gail King for basically saying that, blaming it on the network. Well, what she's trying to tell you is the network was teasing 94 seconds. That's not the entire body of work. You're only hearing 94 seconds that they wanted to tease. So, okay, you could be pissed off at the network. Be pissed off at CBS and say, why did CBS only show the 94 seconds? They could have leaked a little bit of that and put another question, an answer from another question in there. Because they thought they would make it as salacious as possible.
Even with that, I don't even think that wasn't even that bad. I didn't take anything out of context. Not one thing I take out of context. I don't think Gail
King
took anything out of context. CBS, nothing.
But the only thing I take out of context.
But you're hearing it different than Snoop Dogg.
Well, I'm just saying.
Than Lil Boozy.
Taken out of context is if you felt that was the entire interview. Right? Or if you felt like that was the tone of the entire interview, I guess. But as far as the conversation, nothing was. It wasn't edited. This was the conversation. This is what you asked. This is how you handled it.
People
just don't want to hear it right
now.
That's
right. It's irrelevant, Lou.
They just don't want to hear it.
They don't want that question asked. They don't want that portion of Kobe's life even brought up. They don't want it. And if you bring it up, and especially in this case, if you happen to be an African-American journalist who's doing her job, it's even worse. And
well,
that's
be even
where you're
worse if she was white. I think. You know, I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, it doesn't really matter. It's going to be bad no matter what. Right? They don't want to hear it. They don't want to address it. I thought it was a good conversation, a real conversation, especially when she came back and said, yeah, but Lisa, you would never see it. Like, it was real.
So I thought it was handled properly by both sides. So think about this. Oprah doesn't normally do this. She came out of the woodwork today and showed up on NBC, showed up and tried to sit there and plead for people to back off of her friend, Gail King. It is not working.
Wow.
It is not working. Oprah cannot quiet down the forces out there, and this thing
is a mess. Lil Boozy, whatever, in the background, there must be his girl or whoever it is saying, man, you better be careful. Like, isn't that Oprah's friend? He's like, I don't care.
I don't give a friend of you.
Yeah, don't play anymore.
All right, we get to the phone calls. Your reaction to this bizarre story, 617-779-7937. Another hour to go. We go 30 minutes commercial free.